Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Riff Cats and other stories. Stories of a cat stuck up on a roof and different cats that I've heard of or known of during my time on the planet. And I'm doing this as a podcast, pretty much off the top of my head. One of the, I suppose, interesting things is that if I ever do a request podcast or response podcast, very few people listen to it for some reason or other. And I've got to get to the rehab goal of being able to talk on topics and talk around topics without necessarily having the usual people to speak with. I suppose it's a little bit of a different skill when you're speaking with people. You really want to really listen, think, and respond intelligently. Well, at least I do, at least so much. And so you've got a different skill where you're actually trying to actually assemble thoughts and get them out. So there's a bit of a theme to learning about cats and cats over time. So I've sort of learnt some strange lessons about cats. And cats themselves are rather interesting in terms of that they're familiar ones, domesticated cats you can pat, but the other cats, sort of feral cats and, I think gutter cats. There's occasionally a few gutter, there's a gutter cat, at least somewhere around here in Glenbrook, which sort of lives in a gutter and stuff like that. I should say that I'm broadcasting from Glenbrook with a fearsome wind coming along, so I'm not too concerned about the quality of this podcast. Sorry, dear listeners. There's this thing about cats on one aspect have their own intrusion into your life. There's things you can pat and play around with, and you know, we used to sort of pose our cat and dress it up and things like that. But then you've got these sort of really nasty, dangerous cat outside, which is sort of eating all the bird life, and it's pretty mangy and a source of disease. You've got these two aspects of cats coming along, and as humans, we anthropomorphize, whatever it is, we put our human personalities into cats, and so we empathize with them. So it's sort of an interesting place in which the cat, I don't know, stand, they sort of slink or catwalk into the night. That goes there. Now, of course, I consider them being a sort of a friend of the birds and the garden and native Australian thing as absolute enemy number one. And, think that people are far more profitably keep rabbits. Let's give you a little rabbit story. So, rabbits are variously, they were eaten as food, shot as pests, and I do remember one story. I'll give you a sort of side story first before I tell you the cat on the roof story. I was cycled from Melbourne to Adelaide and stopped to ask for farmer directions. Had a small calibre .22, I think it's a .22 calibre rifle, and slung over, and I was talking to him, and he actually saw something in the back of his head. I don't know how he did it, but he just saw a rabbit on a sort of a sandy rubbish land in front of a paddock, and he shot the rabbit dead. It wasn't a big pump of a military rifle. It was a small little crack. He just shot the rabbit, went on talking, and came back, and sort of the rabbit was a pretty amazing thing to see. It was a bit of a conversation stopper for me, but not for him. So that's that sort of aspect of it. Just to give you an idea that rabbits, I've seen its pests, and definitely pests up in Queensland. You're not allowed to actually own a domestic rabbit in Queensland. So much so. And so, obviously, there are people who have crossed over into the line, including my kids, who love their rabbits because you can pick them up. And the great thing is that they don't catch, you know, endangered species. They do probably nibble at things and obviously destroy the entire environment if they get out. but they're pretty sort of affectionate type of things. And of course, this is not escaped some Queensland people who've been illegal rabbit holders. And of course, it's there's a bust. The police went rap, rap, rap in the middle of the night. Queensland police here, officer here, we believe you're holding some rabbits here. And they said, oh, no, they're not rabbits. They're just long-eared guinea pigs. And I don't know how the story finished, but, you know, it's just one of those classification views sort of brings to a head the complexity of different views which don't actually match up at all. The police view and the owner's view and the sort of crazy things of affection and reality and all that type of stuff. Now, so the first story I'm going to do is a recent story which came to life, and it said a lot to me. To keep anonymity, I'll change the names, and so I'll just select a name, not Jane, it's Sue. I'll pick a name, Sue, the person who is the protagonist in this. And I think it's important to imagine Adelaide, and you see it from the sky flying in, and it may not occur to many people because they fly over many cities, but there's an awful lot of roofs, a lot of individual separate dwellings, an awful lot of roofs and suburbs you fly in. And in one of these houses, Sue lived, and saw opposite, on the opposite roof, a cat. And it wasn't getting down, it wasn't looking all that happy. And that cat had decided to live on its roof, on the roof, to which, what would you do? You'd say, well, some people, and this story similarly, you would try and remove the cat from the roof or help the cat down. But there was something in it that that cat had decided that it was going to spend its days on the roof. And so Sue got home and got some of her elderly Labrador kibble, it's called, and hurled it onto the roof opposite. And this, of course, would be, in many circumstances, something that people living inside the house would think, what was that? Was that hail? So perhaps it's not necessarily in the best interest of the cat, but this cat began to survive. And I sort of like the idea of this odd view. Now, from flying over, you think just how unlikely that case is. Not unlikely that Sue would think of throwing food on the roof to the cat, but the fact that you've got all those roofs there and that cat could have been on, and it's only one roof that would have a view of it, of Sue and that particular cat person. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a fairly... as a strategy, the cat would have had a whole lot of things that it was thinking about. You know, like, I can't survive on the ground anymore. It's just too much. The other cats are just getting in my face too much. I'm just going to spend the rest of my days, I don't care what it is, I'm just going to live my life up on a roof. And obviously, there's not a lot of water and not a lot of food up there in a roof. And you, as a cat, you wouldn't say, oh, plan, well, I'm going to have food thrown at it. And the idea that the food went up on the roof and some of the food would roll down. And the idea of the owners underneath of the house, not the cat, underneath, wouldn't put two and two together. You know, there's cat food down here on the on the verge of the roof, you know, the drop line of the roof. You know, what's going on here? It's sort of people, I suppose I love the idea of people living their entire life and missing sort of major clues falling around them. Sort of, why is dog food there on the ground? Stuff like that. And look, and by and by, the people were told about the cat, and the cat came down, and had five kittens. So that's another story of so that's another thing of going into isolation when you have sort of ideas or plans inside you which are sort of not accepted by the world, and that coming up. So there was this other hidden story. So you see the cat on the roof, you don't know that's there. So that's a little story, and so it really sort of got to me on those aspects, the aspects of the percentage probability, the intervention, the realization, the views, different views of cats, and the cat having an inner secret or inner life that was happening to it, which determined all these unusual factors to come along. So I rather like that. Well, I have to get back to my cat stories. And I think the very first cat story was in South Australia. And I was a little, I suppose, well, obviously I'm an old, ugly boy now, but at a certain stage in history, I was a baby and a little boy. And in South Australia, it's sort of different from what you would exist nowadays. You could send a five-year-old, a seven-year-old, off somewhere, and well, probably six-year-old off somewhere. So I would, as a six-year-old, go off to the supermarket with a list and do the shopping and bring it home. Pretty amazing stuff. And as a six-year-old, I would walk a few blocks to a speech therapist. So this is pretty amazing that when I was a kid, I was a late speaker and used to over-listen, it was found out eventually, to people and things and over-invent and stuff like that. So I went to this speech therapist, Miss Blakeway, and opposite Miss Blakeway used to have cats, and she was feeding a cat. She said, "Oh, look, there's a new stray cat." And there was a sort of a high school between Miss Blakeway's and our place, and a creek and stuff like that. Now, so that's the first introduction to the cat. Now, the cat was then seen in our house, a fair distance away, and I suppose you could probably think. And my brother was besotted with it. So if you can imagine, in the 60s, I suppose it would have been, those little sort of plastically felt cowboy hats and a cowboy sort of vinyl plastic 60s rhinestone jacket and a little guitar and singing to the cat. I think it was Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, which was top of the charts, top of the pops, the king of pop. Johnny Farnham sang Sadie the Cleaning Lady and Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, which is pretty amazing because that was not an original Johnny Farnham song, but however, he did sing it to it. That was good. You know, look at that. Isn't that sweet? We're never, ever, ever, ever getting a cat. But it's good that this cat occurred here. And then two doors up, someone began feeding the cat, as one does. I think it was Mrs. Hermerson. And this horrible thing happened. She put down the food. The cat was looking at it, and she picked it up because, you know, you're not doing it, or whatever it is. And the cat leapt up and bit her on the arm. And then there was this street discussion. Now, it's also a bit harder to understand neighbourhoods. A South Australian neighbourhood is different from a New South Wales neighbourhood. There's a conversation over... It's conservative, but there's conversations, and the kids are allowed to move huge distances. I used to go for... 7 years old, I'd go for 3-4 kilometres walks into the next suburbs and back. Sunday afternoon walk, you were free to go wherever you were, free to go to anyone's houses and stuff like that. It was a free, blissful time. There was no... Yeah, it was a pretty amazing time. However, the story got back that indeed cats are quite dangerous, and there was a wise counsel. Of course, you don't have wise counsels without you don't include kids in wise counsels, and it was decided that it was best for hygiene that we got a cat that we understood. And so my brother was consulted, what sort of cat do you want? I want a red cat. Now, the best you can do is go to the cattery, which I still remember in Adelaide. It was still pretty mangy, odd-looking cats. Cats with you know, woodly-looking eyes, and you know, strange like this. Back then, cats were just put in the cattery. What I know, so there's cattery. And there was this red cat, which was not that bright, but it turned out to be extremely plastic. And that was called Ginger Puss. I wanted to talk about, obviously not red cat, Ginger Puss. And there was something pretty amazing about an unoriginal name given by a small kid. It's sort of quite good. It sort of reminds me of a story at the local preschool where, what do you want to do when you grow up? And this, astronaut, fireman, nurse. No one says Pope or Prime, or some. No one says Prime Minister. It's generally things that people you see around the place. Coles delivery man, I suppose, would be now the story. But this person said, "Oh look, I want to be a dog," and someone else said, "I want to be a cat," and it lost the entire plot. But the story of Ginger Puss was a very easygoing cat, because we used to pick it up and do all sorts of amazing things. I'll always carry it by its arms, with the legs going down. And of course, there's one thing we didn't fully understand, is that cats can be lactose intolerant. And lactose intolerance means that they do heaps of uncontrolled poo on various things. And so there's a series of cat poo stories when my school uniform gets a weed on, and it used to weed poo on all of us. And the time where they were fixing the street. It's also hard to understand back in those days. Fixing a street would require a few labourers, a tent, and would be a big thing, whereas nowadays it's a sort of truck rolls up and it does a few kilometres of in the same amount of time. That might sort of, you might be there for a couple of days if they're digging up a hole or something like that. So for this, people would have the material put up, and so there's this big sand pile. Of course, Ginger Puss made it a volcano at the top. So it was just pretty amazing stuff. And the legends of Ginger Puss, I was able to tell my kids before there was a ban on me recounting any old times at home. That's before the ban was put in. My older daughter compiled a book of the various Ginger Puss episodes that were told. So there's that story. So right on early on, I had sort of learnt the basic story that cats can be dangerous. Now, there's a few, I suppose, interesting stories of friends who have cats. And there's one friend who's got a cat called My Pulse, the Gaelic for My Pulse. Sort of beautiful, engaging name for how you can form a relationship with your pet. And it's sort of a pretty amazing story. But I suppose what I want to do is get to two more recent cat stories. I should say about my friend, this is getting back to Australia and the feral cats. So Australian feral cats are pretty big monsters, and you can't knock them off with a .22. You need a gauge shotgun. And had a friend who lived up in Queensland, lived bush, and began to really hate cats. I think, and you also sort of pretty hate foxes. Well, the foxes are sort of a little bit different here in terms of that they're a bit more mystical. I was the cats, so I came around and saw him one time underneath a car with a squash racket, and he was going for a cat. And I came around to his friend, came up to him, and his friends were arguing, and they were arguing about skinning a cat. Oh, it's awful to say, I suppose, if you like cats, skinning a cat. I was actually witnessing there people describing about the having an argument about more than one way to skin a cat without actually thinking about the actual depth of the story or anything like that. It was just one of those things. And he used to make cat hats for the Melbourne Cup. It was actually quite good. And I do remember that someone knew a dark secret of mine, that I did have a cat skin which had given to me, and she wanted to wear it for a play as a beard to play Karl Marx. That was extremely funny. I still have the ribbon that she'd used as just one of those memories. This is someone coming in. It's a bit odd. Well, that being said, we had various things around our house. A cat used to walk at night, and my son used to be very frightened of the night cat and would go here. And again, in our house, there was various cats. And we have beautiful in our garden, or not recently, but for many years, well, most years, we have a bowerbird. They set up they're blue satin bowerbirds, and they pick up all things blue, and it's rather good. You can see Telstra being, going, what the? And of course, bits of blue telephone wire gets put in, blue pegs, everything, and you sort of, this is for the bowers, you sort of feel for the male bowerbird, or a male would feel for the male bowerbird, because there's a lot of effort, and the female goes in and specs and stuff like that, and you just feel that they're always saying, no, not good enough, nah, nah. And there's a lot of things. Now, the bowerbird, it's a little bit aside. This is why we sort of try and kick cats out. The bowerbird's got a nest on the ground. One bowerbird, if it was in grand designs, wouldn't have won the prize, because it made a bower in the middle of a footpath. And we sort of absolutely enjoyed that one, because it would, a kid would ride past it. Oh, Rick, what the? And then the bower would be rebuilt. So this bower, apparently it was grand designs. The thing is that the bowerbirds are mimics as well. And the bowerbird out here began to mimic our wake up alarm. A wake up alarm. So if you switch off the alarm or close off the alarm, want to sleep in, and of course this bird would actually sing the bird, and they would do the various things. Now, of course, the other bird locally hit here is the lyrebird. And the lyrebird can actually do incredible mimicries. So the lyrebird at Taronga Zoo does, I think, Star Wars imitations and stuff like that. And it's just phenomenal. Star Wars, Neighbours and stuff like that. It's the most incredible mimicry. And then it keeps on going until a Chinese tourist films it. I shouldn't say Chinese, a tourist films it and then plays it back. And the bowerbird, suddenly, the one thing that does stop it is hearing itself again. So you've got these incredible birds and parrots and blue-tongued lizards and stuff like that. So we sort of keep the things around. But then, we had a stray cat, which came around and decided to live underneath a house. And I was, concerned, trying to move it along for safety reasons as much as anything else. And I was underneath there, and I said one of my daughter's friends about this cat. I was a bit frightened of it, and concerned, needed to get it away from the house for hygiene reasons and all this type of stuff. And she said, "Oh, you do not know how to look after cats." So, nonetheless, she got this cat out and she cuddled it and stroked it. And what the heck? And then walked with it. Now, you can imagine, walking with a cat might be a bit of a dangerous thing to do. Not a dangerous thing. Well, if you're going to walk several blocks with a cat, you normally can't do that. She walked several blocks back to her house, and then let's take it to the vet and find out. No, it's not microchipped. That's another thing about cats and that type of stuff. They've got to be microchipped. I think nowadays that's the general thing. It's microchipped and neutered. But this is up here. We'll take it up to the vet. And we'll see it, coochie coochie coo. They went the next day, and they said, "Can we see the cat? What's going on?" "Oh, we had to put it down." "Why?" "Oh, that cat had a mental condition, i.e., it was psychotic, and it would suddenly change to being the most ferocious beast ever," which I thought is just a great story, for me, a great story. And it sort of goes for people as well, in terms of that you can know people quite well for a long time, and then they can suddenly go for a short while because, you know, they've got sort of a piece of their computer code's gone whack and stuff like that. But of course, you can't put them down. Of course, you've got to be always cautious, I suppose, with people. And so the final story, I think, knowing this type of stuff about cats, especially, is that I was walking along school, and in the corner was a kitten, and not really, it was just in the corner. You know, there's going to be lots of school kids around later on the day, in the kitten. And I sort of went to the staff room, and there's sort of younger female head teachers, that type of stuff there. I said, "Oh, look, there's a little kitten. It's in the corner. And here, it's all cold by itself, and just phone up and get it taken away." And they said, "Oh, what, the mummy's little kitten," and they took the kitten in, and they had it there, and they had it in the office, and it was all crawling under the cutest little doughy-eyed kitten, and they, wires of course won't, the natives won't do it, the RSPCA came in, and they said, "Oh, yep, that cat's definitely sick. It's got pariasis or something like that, some sort of contagious disease." Okay, I think there's also another various diseases you get from cat piss and stuff like that. And so I sort of knew enough to connect the two people together, but didn't have enough influence to say, "Oh, look, there's sort of actually a real world danger in this thing." And then the cat went, and there's a, "Oh, I don't think we've been infected." You did have it actually crawling around your face and stuff like that. It's just pretty amazing. So this is an amazing story of cats. I suppose one of the things I have learnt to do is summarise. And so we've started off with I suppose a theory of cats, where they exist in human existence. They exist somewhere in the domestic realm, somewhere in the wild realm, somewhere in the fantasy realm, somewhere in the actual disease realm, danger realm. And it's in there. Then you've got the story of the cat on the roof, and the interaction between probability, chance, and hidden stories, sort of like stories within stories, stories there, which go forward. And then you've got the long story of a life with different cats, and but how your understanding of it changes, just through, not through direct tutorial saying this is a cat and it's got factors A, B, C, dot point A, and then press the clicker and it turns on to the next PowerPoint slide. No, it's more falling into one interaction and then people educating you by, or you being educated by being part of problem solving. And problems, say, like lactose intolerance, only know about that decades afterwards, about, oh, that would be that, and you see it in a different process, and then you've got the different stories there. And for me, it's the interesting thing that the folded story inside the cat's deep secret is that it's psychotic and can be extremely dangerous at the drop of a hat or something like that. And I think this really means that, you know, that cat was never loved and, you know, all that type of crap, all that type of stuff. And so it's one of these things that if that cat was completely looked after, it would have been perfectly perhaps right, or it could have been diseased and had a problem there. And then the final closing story of never advancing, that is, people have a different life trajectory and have this view on certain topics, and they're presented with information that what they did was not necessarily that sensible and a bit risky, and it will have affected their future in a particular way, yet because they're wed to a series of beliefs which comfort them, they're sort of stuck with that, and it carries forward, and that seems to be the message carrying forward. So that's my podcast on this, and I hope it's come out reasonably well.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.